It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sits down with Senate Insurance Committee Chairman Jason Rapert to discuss the public school employee insurance crisis.
Plus, we'll talk to some of the characters of this year's incarnation of Eureka Springs' Silent City, travel to Fort Smith to learn about the history of Miss Lores, and more.
But first, after 2 weeks of enrollment, State Department of Human Services officials say thousands of Arkansans have taken steps to enroll in the private option health insurance program. Amy Webb with DHS gives us a rundown of the figures.
The Department of Human Services has received through its online portal 1,509 applications for coverage through the private option. And in addition to that, we've received 1,119 telephone and paper applications that came into our county offices. And those applications are cumulative for the first 2 weeks of enrollment.
Webb says those numbers are in addition to the more than 53,000 current DHS clients who returned letters saying they wanted to enroll in the private option program. She says these figures differ from stats from the AR Health Connector web portal.
This is strictly for the DHS portal that we have, accessarkansas.gov. It's the systems where people could go and apply for different public assistance programs online. So the difference here is the state has a site today where people can apply for public assistance programs, and they can also apply for the private option through that program.
Webb says the DHS website primarily targets lower-income Arkansans and the working poor who need health care coverage. Arkansans at higher income levels are encouraged to use the federal web portal, healthcare.gov, to apply and shop for plans.
According to a report released yesterday, state schools do not have equal facilities across the districts. Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families says richer districts have college-quality sports facilities, iPads for each student, and television studios, while poorer districts make do with the bare minimum. Jerry Derlikowski of Arkansas Advocates is the author of that report.
Some of our community schools still just have the basic, what we used to call home ec, I think they call it consumer science now, maybe an accounting bookkeeping class, but they don't have all these extra opportunities, and we consider it an opportunity gap that the children in low property wealth areas, and frankly, they're probably the areas of the state that need some of those career training opportunities the worst.
The report offers possible solutions, including greater state spending on educational facilities and fewer tax cuts.
Work-study employees at Northwest Arkansas Community College are returning to work after college officials have secured the funding necessary to pay the hourly wages. Stephen Hines, Director of Communications for the college, says the 51 work-study employees were given furlough notices Friday and suspensions of work began Monday, but college officials have been looking for ways to put students back to work.
In working with the Arkansas Department of Higher Ed and also talking with other college and university leaders, we determined that if funding were available to still be drawn through the system where we access the funds to pay the work-study students, then we could indeed recall them, and we were able to access that system. And so we did notify them yesterday afternoon that they were being recalled effective today.
Though work-study employees have returned to work after being furloughed Monday and yesterday, Hines says the funding for those work-study employees isn't yet entirely secure.
That system is something that is relying upon federal government, and so if the debt ceiling is not raised this week, and potentially the vote is tomorrow, but if the debt ceiling is not raised, there is a chance that those students might have to be furloughed again.
Meanwhile, the University of Arkansas furloughed 19 employees beginning yesterday. Those employees included 8 faculty and 11 staff members who were to receive pay from National Science Foundation, or NASA grants. 10 of those employees received 90% to 100% of their salary from federal funds and will be on full furlough. The remaining 9 will be on partial furlough because they only receive a portion of their salaries from federal funding. The amount of federal funding for those employees ranges between 3% and 67%. According to the university, furloughed employees will receive health benefits through the end of the month, but if the furlough lasts longer than that, they will need to arrange for health care coverage. In addition, 80 students whose work is funded through federal research grants have avoided furloughs for now, as the colleges and departments in question have found alternate funding for those students.
The replacement of a railroad crossing will impede traffic today in Midtown Fayetteville. Workers with the Arkansas and Missouri Railroad will be replacing the rail crossing near the Township Street and Gregg Avenue intersection. Vehicular traffic won't be able to cross the tracks on Township while the work is being conducted.
As has become a seemingly increasing habit for cities in Northwest Arkansas, Fayetteville has been named to yet another Top 100 list, this time to the Top 100 Best Places to Live by Livability.com. The website, which ranks quality of life and travel amenities of small and mid-sized cities in the United States, placed Fayetteville at 63rd in the nation, stating that the city scored highly in the areas of education and healthcare, as well as social and civic capital. Topping the list were Palo Alto, California, Boulder, Colorado, and Berkeley, California.
Mostly cloudy tonight with lows in the 40s. Sunny tomorrow with highs from 66 in northwest Arkansas to 71 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 38 to 44 degrees. This is Ozarks at Large. Recently, we've been monitoring the public school employee insurance crisis in Arkansas. The fund is running a $53 million deficit, and teachers are facing an almost 50% increase in premiums if nothing is done. Is a consensus forming to allow Governor Mike Beebe to call a special session to shore up this fund? This weekend, Senate Insurance Committee Chairman Jason Rapert appeared on the political television program Capital View, which is hosted by Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas and David Goins. Last Friday afternoon, senators met to talk about a potential special session, and during an interview on Capital View, Roby asked Senator Rapert what was the result of that meeting.
I actually conferenced with some of the senators afterwards. I actually was in another meeting, but of course I've been almost in daily meetings, frankly, that are conference calls. Where we're at is we're starting to reach consensus. There's definitely consensus that we have to do something short term. Obviously in 2010, when the adequacy report requested that the governor and the legislature put $47 million more into the public school employee plan, they did not do that. Mm-hmm. And so we're at a point where we do not have a choice what we're going to do here if you're going to have a plan at all. And so where we're at is that we do seem to be having consensus come around the fact that this short-term plan, hopefully everybody will be able to support the 10%, which is the national average, by the way. Everyone in Arkansas and across the country is experiencing premium insurance increases.
That's so, the 10% you're referring to, a 10% premium increase.
That's right. No one went into this thinking that you could maintain no increase whatsoever. So what we've ended up settling on is what is the national average increase. But people in Arkansas need to remember, just 2 years ago, teachers had an increase. Last year, they had a 21% increase. So when you think about it, in some cases, some of them say they've already had a 50% increase. Facing another 48% spike in those premiums January 1 is just untenable. So the short term is coming together easily. The longer term, we've been battling out making sure that we have the money and resources to do that. At the same time, reform some elements of the Employee Benefits Board, the Life and Health Board and the Employee Benefits Division, because there's been some bad decisions that's left us in this situation.
First on the short-term part, that $50 million plus that essentially the plan is short of, $43 million was the number that was kind of tossed out after Speaker David Carter met with Governor Beebe and some other legislators earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. Does that $43 million number seem, that's pretty much the number we're looking at, or could that change?
That is. I was in that meeting, as a matter of fact, and frankly, it was not $43 million to begin that meeting.
It changed.
And I personally support the fact that if you're going to maintain a public school employee insurance plan, you have got to take action so that you do not continue to have participants flee that plan.
Was it lower?
Actually, it was higher.
It was higher, okay.
And, well, excuse me, it was lower to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you do this, you're going to lay on them another 30% increase over what they've already had just a year ago. You're basically saying we don't want you to participate in this plan. So what I've said is that we can't undo the mistakes of the past, We can't even make excuses for it and definitely don't want to defend it. But we can take action on where we are at now. We have teachers in every county in this state, over 200 school districts in this state, over 83,000 participants that are bus drivers, they're cafeteria workers, they're support personnel, and these teachers. And they are supported by taxpayers. And I think that sometimes is forgotten here. This is not a bailout of a private entity. These are the people that said, we are called to teach. We are called to work in our school districts, and they're supported by taxpayer money. And frankly, the employer has not taken care of the issues to make sure the plan is fiscally sound. That's what the governor and the legislatures are going to attempt to do now.
So there's consensus gelling on this short-term solution, $43 million plus a 10% premium increase for teachers in the next year. What about the long-term solutions? There has to be consensus on that before the governor is going to call a special session. Restructuring the insurance board, requiring deductibles to change, maybe steering more people into the bronze plans. What are the long-term solutions that you're looking at that are the highlights?
You've actually articulated the points very well. Number one, the gold plan had no deductible on it. There have been some increases in the copays on that plan, but there was consensus we'd like to see what a deductible would look like there, just for the sake of making sure to understand you can't continue to have that kind of plan. We need to increase understanding, number one, and utilization, number two, of the bronze plan with HSA accounts. A lot of teachers have told us they simply didn't understand that they could put money into that HSA account and carry it over year to year. So a lot of the people that are actually utilizing the plan, they say they love it. Because you have to understand, if they got to the end of their career and they had not used up all of the balance in the HSA account, they get to actually keep that. That's their money.
How does restructuring the insurance board help the situation? It doesn't seem like that changes anything fundamentally to me.
Well, even teachers, if you go out to that Facebook page they have and see those nearly 10,000 people, they're very upset that a lot of decisions were not made earlier on that would have kept the plan sound. Now, we would like to add a couple of positions to the board. We've asked the governor to please appoint people that have more employee benefits background, insurance background. It's always nice for people to get an appointment to a board, but you need people on that board that can actually make decisions with an understanding of what the impacts are going to be. And so, in addition to having good teacher representation and state employee representation, because that board governs both, we need to have people that understand the impact of insurance. So you're going to see that. You also will see a move to change some of the benefits at some point.
A couple items here in the last minute. One, over the rest of this weekend into Monday and Tuesday, October 15th has been kind of floated as a day to, all right, do we have consensus on long-term or not? Are we going to have a special session? Do you think we'll get there by Tuesday?
I think we're going to get there. We already have people that are signing on to co-sponsor these bills. We already have people that have worked on these drafts. And the House is talking. The Senate is talking. And here's what I can tell you. If we don't reach the consensus and know that we have the votes, there does not need to be a special session. I started this whole debate and started this whole discussion from my perspective. When we began to debate this, I said we need to come together and actually make a decision to fix this plan. As you know, not everybody wanted to have that session. All of those voices have come together. The people that agree with me, we need to fix it. I think we're going to get it done.
Yes or no, does ethics make the call for the special session, do you think?
No, and that's a very good point. And here's the thing. The crisis right now is the teacher health insurance program. And I have asked to make sure that we are able to get that consensus. Please don't invoke other issues that would detract from that. And as you know, there's been some things that have been brought up that have the ability to derail the whole consensus package. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that everybody can come together, focus on the issue at hand. Let's do our business and let's go home.
That was Senate Insurance Committee Chairman Jason Rapert talking to Roby Rock and his co-host David Goins on the political television program Capital View. The show can be seen Sunday mornings on KARK Channel 4 in the Central Arkansas market. To see the full interview, you can visit talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
and Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
On The Next Humankind, we talk with actress and activist Mia Farrow, a UNICEF ambassador who has tried to arouse the world's conscience around the suffering of civilians in the Darfur region of Sudan. Also, attorney Jonathan Granoff discusses what it means that tens of thousands of nuclear weapons exist in the world. I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Humankind.
Listen Saturday at noon or Sunday at 6 a.m. to KUAF.
It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Ooh, guess what today is?
The 16th.
I knew that. Guess
Wednesday.
What else? Yeah, I knew that.
Hump Day.
No, try again.
I don't know.
It's the start of Fall Arts and Crafts Festival.
Oh, it is.
I love that. I love that. It's worth how fast time flies.
Yeah.
One of our reporters talked to an artist named Ralph Mathey, who is going to be selling at the Bella Vista Arts and Crafts Festival, and he is donating all the proceeds of the jewelry he sells to Hear the Cry. Hear is an acronym for Haiti Education Assistance and Relief.
Oh.
So the goal of the organization is to equip young Haitians through education to have the vision and skills to impact their own communities. He has been making jewelry ever since he bought a jewelry factory.
Random. But I like it.
And he found a lot of pieces that were imported from Europe before World War II. So he has authentic vintage components.
Oh, very cool.
And I'm going to miss it because I'm going to be in Austin.
Oh, no.
So if you make it to Bella Vista, check it out. There are also the usual set of fall crafts fairs, Spanker Creek, which starts today and continues through Sunday. The Bella Vista Arts and Crafts Festival starts tomorrow and is only through Saturday. Don't be confused. The Jones Center Arts and Crafts Festival in Springdale, which is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The War Eagle Fair starts tomorrow through Saturday. Shorter hours on Sunday, but just by a little bit. And that, of course, is at War Eagle Mills Farm. The War Eagle Mill Fall Craft and Culinary Fair, Thursday through Sunday. The Sharp Show at War Eagle, which is everybody thinks it's part of the Mill Fair, but it's not, Thursday through Sunday. The Frisco Station Mall Arts and Crafts Festival, Thursday through Sunday. And the Ozark Regional Arts and Crafts Show, Friday and Saturday at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale and the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. You can check out all of this in last week's What's Up, which is available online at nwaonline.com.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Fort Smith is packed with history. Presidents, generals, outlaws, and legends have passed through, and the city continues to do a remarkable job of presenting those stories to visitors. For many, the visit to historic Fort Smith begins in a building along the Arkansas River. That building dates back to the 19th century and has survived a massive flood or horrific tornado and neglect. Miss Laura's Visitor Center is the hub of information for tourists. And as Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums tells us, it has a colorful history of its own.
Carolyn Joyce is the Tour and Travel Sales Director for the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau. For more than 20 years, she's been telling visitors and locals alike about Miss Laura's. That's the building that's home to the Fort Smith Visitor Center.
Laura Ziegler came to Fort Smith from Vermont in the late 1800s for the express purpose of opening one of these houses.
One of these houses means a house of prostitution. At the height of the era of accepted prostitution in Fort Smith, there were seven houses involved in the business, according to Carolyn Joyce. She says the one operated by Laura Ziegler was known as the Queen of the Row and the grandest bordello in the West. Officially, the enterprise was known as the Riverfront Commercial Hotel, though few customers actually would stay the night.
The other houses were charging $1, and she charged $3. So, and to put that in proper perspective, that was at a time when people worked all week for $3. So mostly the clientele here would have probably been the local affluent, not necessarily the guys coming in on the boats or on the train.
Laura Ziegler was a brilliant businesswoman. According to the Encyclopedia of Arkansas History and Culture, she borrowed $3,000 in the late 1800s for the building and paid that loan back in just 17 months. She operated the business until 1911, when she sold it for a nifty return on investment, a sum of $47,000. For the dozen or so years she managed the house, she lived in two rooms on the north side of the bottom floor so she could observe the business.
Then the three rooms on the south side, on the lower level, those were used for gambling, dancing, socializing. So the gentleman came in the front door, money changed hands right there at the screen door. Then they came on in. There was a bar in this area, gaming table, socialized with the girls and so forth.
The $3 admission would be exchanged for a token at a screen door in the front of the foyer. That would then be exchanged by the clients upstairs. Carolyn Joy says Laura's nine employees would keep one of those $3 and give two back to Ms. Ziegler. But room and board for the employees was free. The interior, according to surviving records, looks pretty similar today to what it must have looked like in the first decade of the 20th century, though today's colors in the foyer are probably muted in comparison to 1900. While the business changed hands a few times over the next several decades and was eventually abandoned before its current use, some items discovered in the building are on display.
Beautiful fretwork. This is original. There's three places in the house where fretwork is used, and this is all wood. So beautiful piece. And as I said, original. And in this area, the gold picture frame molding, we salvaged enough of that after the tornado to put it back into the hallway here. But that's 18 karat gold leaf, so you don't paint over it or anything. You know, you lose the value of it, but...
Laura Ziegler sold the business in 1911 to Bertha Dean, a woman who had worked for her. Bertha Dean held on to the building until her death in the late 1940s, still operating it as a house of prostitution, though a 1924 law in Fort Smith had officially criminalized the practice. That the building survived not just police raids and time, but disasters as well, is remarkable. An oil tanker explosion and subsequent fire almost took out the house in 1910. That's a night that is now legendarily known as the Night of the Lingerie Parade because so many employees and clients of the row houses had to escape in a matter of moments.
Now, that fire came within 75 feet of Miss Laura's, and then there was a shift in the wind, and that's what actually saved this building. Then in 1943, we had the flood. Came right up to the back of the house, and so it survived the flood of 43. In 1963, this was the only house left on the row, and the city decided that if it was not purchased by September of that year, they were going to tear this house down. Don Reynolds of Don Ray Media bought it just to save it from the wrecking ball. So there again, it survived the wrecking ball. 1996, the tornado took the top off and left us with an enormous amount of damage, both structural and water damage, with 5.5 inches of rain and no top on it. So, again, survived.
The building was placed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1973, the first former bordello to have that honor. It was an ambitious restoration that began 10 years later in 1983. For a brief time, it was a restaurant, and the visitor center moved in 1992. And Carolyn Joyce, the tour and travel sales director for the Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau, has been telling busloads of visitors about Miss Laura ever since, often in character and dressed as the famed woman.
And then in this room, I have on display some of my costuming. I have portrayed Miss Laura for almost 22 years, and my hats are made by the lady who made all the hats for Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. My jewelry's made in Florida, and the costumes are actually made locally. So folks enjoy seeing, you know, just what I have on when I'm in costume, but they get an idea of over the years other dresses that I've worn.
Miss Laura's, that name, by the way, was attached long after Laura Ziegler had left town, is part tourism information center and part museum. The staff has worked hard to fill in details about the city that at times has been rough, at times raucous, and has always been interesting.
The opera glasses that we have here, that brings notice to the fact that we used to take them to the theater. Miss Laura would take them to the theater once a month. But, of course, they had to set up in the balcony. They didn't mix with the general public at all.
And when you say that, you mean the women that she employed?
Yes,
she'd take them
to the theater once a month. And they would have to sit up in the balcony, and the wives down below would turn around and glare up at these girls because they knew they'd come from, you know, this side of the tracks.
Laura Ziegler left no journal or diary that has ever been found. Much of the information that we know about Miss Laura's and the operation of the house has been gleaned from county records, tax records, and doctor's records.
And this is a health certificate. The doctor came down once a month. He checked each of the girls. The madam paid the $5 fee for each girl. And if they were well and allowed to continue to work, then this health certificate was issued. And this had to be pinned over their beds. Raids were pretty common. And that's one of the things they were checking for, to make sure all those health certificates were in date and displayed.
After 11 years of operating her downtown house, Laura Ziegler, at age 50, left Fort Smith, sold the business, and what happened after that is still a mystery.
Now, we know that when she left here, she went to Missouri for a little while because that's where Bertha mailed payments. But once that was finished and we could not track her, and we've done research on that, we've had grants to try to find her and locate her and so forth, and have not come up with anything.
The Fort Smith Visitor Center inside Miss Laura's is at 2 North B Street in downtown Fort Smith. It's open Monday through Saturday from 9 until 4, and Sunday afternoons from 1 until 4:30.
We know we have something very unique.
Well, without being tacky, I mean, it was a visitor center of sorts for a long time.
We've been taking care of visitors a long time. You're exactly right.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
We move now from the River Valley to Carroll County for another history lesson on some other colorful characters.
It's become a Halloween tradition for Carroll County residents to stroll after dark in Eureka Springs' Silent City, the town's ancient cemetery. There, they are met by chaperones shrouded in Victorian garb, who guide them to graves upon which stand apparitions of long-dead citizens telling tales. In this fifth autumnal season brings a musical theme. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich provides this preview.
Voices from Eureka's Silent City Cemetery Tour is researched by native June Westfall along with Mary Jean Sell, who writes the script.
June comes up with a list of 12 or 13 names, and we talk about them and who they were and what they did, and then we go out to the cemetery to see if they really are buried close together, because we want the walking tour to take just under an hour, if possible. And then from there, we just choose the characters we like the best, and then June and I get together, and she tells me stories about these people, and I go through the files at the Eureka Springs Historical Museum and other places where such information is hidden away.
The couple script characters from the record in their own words or create dialogue. Previous themes have dwelled on the founding of the resort Victorian town. Last year, the troops staged a sesquicentennial program of the Civil War era with special grant funding. But this year, they chose an era when Eureka had all but collapsed.
The 1930s and 40s, between the two Great World Wars, which actually for Eureka Springs was a very low time. There were not a lot of tourists in those days, and Eureka was just kind of puddling along, trying its best to survive.
Mountain music has always lifted the spirits of Eureka Springs residents since the village was first founded in the 1880s. And one locally historic fiddler, John Wynn, had moved to Eureka Springs in the early 1900s to farm, was always available to play for barn dances, pie suppers, building raisings, and shiveries, a traditional discordant mock serenade to newlyweds. John Wynn is buried in the cemetery's Potter's Field in an unmarked grave and is being performed by Eureka resident Terry Miller, who recollects one very rowdy chivalry.
You wait till the lights are out and the boys all come up to the house, you see, and they get all pots and pans and they're hooping and hollering and howling at the moon if there is a moon, you see. Groom, he gets up, turns on the lights, opens the door. What is going on out here? And a couple of boys grab him, throw him up on the beam. What is going on? And they're a little wrestling, a lot of laughing, and they head off down through town, you see. Well, then the bride, she comes out, what's going on? And they grab her, but they don't put her on the beam. They put her in a buggy. It's a wheelbarrow. And they go tracing after the groom. Well, anyway, they come on down Armstrong, and they make a right, and they head right for
Caleb
Springs, which just so happens has the biggest trough in town, and it'll fit a groom perfectly. You guessed it. They come a-flying down that hill with a groom on top of that beam, and they stop short and throw him in head first. He comes up a-laughing and gasping for air. Everybody's having a good time. Meanwhile, here comes the bride. Stop, stop, don't throw me in. She's a-yelling and a-screaming, and we're just, by this time, half the town's with us, you see. And so they stop just short. They don't throw her in because she's a lady. They help her out, see. Well, the ladies and the kids supposed to get candy treats, you see, and then the men, they all get cigars from the bride and the groom. And it's a tradition, you see, and they figure if the young couple can make it through the chivalry, that their marriage will last. And by golly, it has.
Townspeople and tourists still flock to Basin Spring Park Bandshell to enjoy live music and dancing. But when Eureka Springs Mayor Claude Fuller performed in the Silent City production by CAPC Director Mike Maloney, built a downtown city auditorium in the late 1920s, the structure revived the town. Here's Mary Jean Sell.
Of course, one of our star characters. You know, every year we have at least one character that's not buried here. And this year it is John Philip Sousa, the March King. He brought his marine band to Eureka Springs in September of 1929 to do two concerts to open the city auditorium.
Five years after the auditorium was built, townspeople decided to host their very first Ozark Folk Festival. That original festival is now in its 66th year. Plus, the city auditorium has staged hundreds of local play productions, school events, and lots of big acts over the years, including Ray Charles, John Prine, Alison Krauss, Emmy Lou Harris, Bill Cosby came, Bela Fleck, Willie Nelson, of course, and Doc Watson. Carroll County resident Joe Parkhill likely performed at the auditorium on numerous occasions as a drummer for his own local three-piece band. But Parkhill, nephew of Claude Fuller, is best known as a longtime proprietor of the Basin Park Hotel. Back in the day, here is Joe performed by local school teacher and writer Jake Allen.
Well, hello, I'm Joe Parkhill.
Who might you be?
Welcome to Eureka Springs. You know, while you're here, young lady, we have a lot of things available to you. We can boat on Lake Lucerne. Oh, that is, you can boat on Lake Lucerne. We could do horseback rides, tramping through the hills on our on foot, or a ride in our tally-ho wagon. And if you had a man folk with you, did you bring your fella? Okay, well, for him, we can go to the hotel, and we've got rooms reserved for playing cards and, well, maybe a little gambling equipment. So we've got a package deal for about $5 a night. You coming down to the Basin Park Hotel, and we can arrange horseback riding for a nominal fee, boating on Lake Lucerne, the whole family, one low cost for all your entertainment.
Also appearing in the Silent City will be Austrian-born Augusta and Adolf Kuckler, performed by Joni Kratzer and Jim White. Adolf was a classically trained zither player, and he played at all the Ozark folk festivals.
And I came here to the States around 1900 or so, and my wife and I, we moved here to Eureka Springs around 1949. And I also play the zither, and we have a small store here in Eureka Springs on South Main Street, where we sell instruments and music and also zithers, and I make repairs from them. And this is my good Frau.
We live upstairs. It is such a little house, but it is all we could afford when we moved here. Papa was invited to play the zither and sing on the television show Name That Tune, and we were able to go to New York City to be on the television show.
And I won $15,000.
He didn't win the top prize of $25,000.
You think I haven't heard the end of that.
A host of other characters will also appear, sharing their tales on how they endured the Great Depression in Eureka Springs. Last year, 1,000 visitors took the Silent City Cemetery tour, some arriving at dusk, and the braver ones coming after dark. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The fifth annual Voices from Eureka's Silent City Cemetery Tour is set for October 18th and 19th, as well as October 25th and 26th. Tours start at 5:30 p.m. and continue every 20 minutes thereafter until 8:30. Tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for children 12 and under. To reserve a ticket, you can visit EurekaSpringsHistoricalMuseum.org, or you can purchase tickets at the gate. You can also call 479-253-9417, and all proceeds will benefit Eureka Springs History Museum.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Malco Theaters, offering a variety of special showings, including the Saturday Metropolitan Opera in HD, rock concerts and music events, special live screenings, and more. Tickets and an event schedule available online at malco.com.
KUAF's on-air fundraiser begins October 24th, and all pledges received during the month of October count toward the goal. Go to supportkuaf.com, and you can make your pledge today. Your pledge helps keep insightful and thought-provoking programming on the air, and thank you.
A few upcoming events you may want to put on your calendar. Raquel Haggard, a resident of Edmond, Oklahoma, will be available to sign copies of her book, Rebuilding Your Temple, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. October 17th. That's tomorrow?
Yes.
Yes. Through the 19th during the Bella Vista Arts and Crafts Festival. Haggard's book is here to help and will cheer readers on as they strive for and reach their weight loss goals. During their 14-week journey through this book, Raquel has provided not only exercise suggestions, questions, weight warrior tips, and a place to log food and calorie choices, but also daily inspiration through scripture. She even provides tasty yet healthy recipes to whet your appetite. For more information about the festival, you can visit www.bellavistafestival.org. It's craft fair weekend.
I cannot believe it's already here. I'm going to miss it. I'm going to be at Harvest Festival.
Well, it's another festival.
It is a festival. Yeah. Well, you're going to do craft fairs, though. You usually do.
I am, yes. My family goes to the War Eagle on Thursday and Friday when we're working.
Sure.
But on Saturday, we always drive up, my mom and I, to Bella Vista, where my great aunt lives.
Okay.
And go to the Bella Vista craft fair.
I don't think I've ever made it to the Bella Vista craft fair.
It's nice. It's on the fairgrounds. It's lots of pottery and outdoor furniture and things to put in your yard. And I like it.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, speaking of outdoor furniture, you're actually going to have a story about furniture on tomorrow's show, right?
You're right. Yeah, for our Locally Made series. I went to Prairie Grove yesterday and spoke with somebody from Rocky Hill Outdoor Furniture. So that will be on tomorrow.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. Well, earlier in this show, we discussed a new report by Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. That same organization is hosting a policy cafe Thursday, October 23rd. That's next Thursday in Fort Smith. The event is scheduled from 9 a.m. to noon at Creekmore Community Center, which is located near the intersection of Rogers Avenue and South 31st Street. Guests can join policy experts and child advocates as they discuss the most important issues facing children and families in Arkansas. By attending this event, you can learn more about the issues that matter most to you, from healthcare to juvenile justice, education to child welfare. Registration is free and the event is open to the public. For more information, you can visit aradvocates.org.
As of yesterday, the Jones Center in Springdale began offering free yoga classes. The free classes are available every Tuesday from now until November 26th. Guests can practice yoga from 5:30 to 6:20 p.m. in Studio A, which is located downstairs. More information is available at thejonescenter.net.
I may need to check that out. I've been wanting to try yoga. I'm kind of nervous about doing it. I know you do it all the time.
I do. I at least do it a couple times a week. My yoga studio does a free one also, actually.
Oh.
Well, just once a month.
Okay.
They do a community class, and it's free to the community, but they ask for a donation
sure.
to a charity.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. So. Okay. Well, I may have to go
free
to those. One of these times, one of these months when I'm free.
Yeah, you're very busy.
I am. And finally, we want to offer our congratulations to the University of Arkansas men's golf team. Fueled by three players at under par for the second straight round, the number 12 ranked Razorbacks won the Crooked Stick Intercollegiate hosted by Indiana yesterday. The Razorbacks entered the day with momentum from Monday's afternoon round, where they posted a 3 under 285, the lowest round by the 14-team field on the 36-hole opening day. Arkansas was able to top that score by one stroke on the par 72-90-yard crooked stick golf club layout to leap past number 8 Georgia, number 15 Florida State, and Purdue en route to its 18th team title under head coach Brad McMacken. Arkansas will close out its fall season on Sunday, October 20th, when it opens play at the Isleworth Collegiate Invitational. The three-day event will be hosted by Texas Tech at Isleworth Golf and Country Club in Windermere, Florida. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Singer-songwriter Bobby Bridger began work on his epic trilogy, A Ballad of the West, more than four decades ago. Since 1974, Bridger has traveled the globe performing this historical epic as a one-man show. Inspired by John G. Neihardt's A Cycle of the West, Bridger's Ballad is a three-part story told in Homeric verse in a song about the mountain men, William F. Buffalo Bill Cody, and the Lakota Sioux people. He will be performing Lakota, the third part of the trilogy, Saturday night at the Benton County School of the Arts in Rogers. He will be joined by guitarist John Inman. Last week, Bobby spoke by phone with Mike Shirky, the host of the Pick and Post here on KUAF. During that conversation, Mike asked Bobby about his relationship with various Native American tribes.
I've ended up writing about the Plains Indians because, frankly, that's what all of us in white culture, most of us in white culture, gravitate very quickly to the Plains tribes. And there's a very, very specific reason for that. And my reasoning was that a pivot point for me was the discovery of the work of John Neihardt, the poet laureate of Nebraska in perpetuity, who wrote Black Elk Speaks, which is the basis for my Lakota ballad. But he also wrote a thing called A Cycle of the West, which was the prototype, basically, for my Ballad of the West. It was the thing that inspired me back when I was still wet behind the ears to lock onto this thing, and but the much bigger picture of that is that when Sitting Bull joined the Buffalo Bill Wild West, prior to that, all the Indians in that show had been Pawnee Indians. And when Sitting Bull joined the show, that meant that the enemy, the Pawnee, the enemy of the Sioux, would never, ever be in the Buffalo Bill show again. And indeed, the only Indians, for the large part, that would ever be in that show again would be either Lakota, Cheyenne, or Arapaho, part of the Confederacy that fought us until the blood of their women and children was on the ground. And so that image of the Indian is what was imprinted on all of us in modern culture and on the world, that of the feathered headdresses of teepees and chinupa, the peace pipe, sweat lodges, all of that. And that culture has become so indelible at this point. And omnipotent almost, that even most of the tribes of North America now are taking on the religious ceremonies and accoutrements of the Plains tribes, which brought Vine Deloria in 1979 to make the remark that Black Elk Speaks had become a North American Bible, and that if any religious classic had emerged in North America, any religion emerged in North America, that it had to be compared to Black Elk Speaks. And so when I say it's more relevant today than it was when I finished it in 1972, I mean that, because I think that that those voices are speaking, and I'm trying to call attention to them, and Lakota's the best way I can do that.
During your show, do you have a segment that you represent the culture of the white person, and then contrast that with the culture of the American Indian?
No, I do that in the beginning of the show, because unlike any other show that I've ever done, I come out and tell people a story first about the evolution of Black Elk's story through Neihardt and on to me and through others. And then I do the piece. And there's a reason for that, and it goes back. I never did really answer your question about my affiliation with Indian tribes. I've been affiliated with quite a few of the upper mountain tribes, the Shoshone and particularly the Crow. I have a lot of dear, dear close friends in those tribes. Of course, I was, Vine Deloria was Dakota, and my best friend for 30 years until he died in 2005. Floyd Westerman was another Dakota who was a dear friend of mine, the actor, folk singer. I'm adopted into the Quapaw tribe in northeastern Oklahoma, up near the Missouri-Kansas border. I've been on the board of the American Indian Theater Company since 1984, and that's a bunch of different tribal affiliations on that. So, yeah, I've had a long history with Indian tribes, but I had a very difficult problem in 1972 when I took Lakota onto the stage. I never wrote it to perform it. I envisioned it being performed by a super group of Indian performers, Floyd Westerman among them, before he became an actor, when he was just a folk singer. And I had befriended Will Sampson and people like that who I saw performing Lakota as a kind of a folk symphony, if you will, or folk opera. And when I went to the stage with it, the guy that directed me said, you know, we were in Austin, there weren't any Indian actors. He said, you need to do this in two parts. Do the Mountain Man show first, the Indian show second, to show the two sides of the coin. And so I made the decision to do it and perform it for one reason alone, and that was that none of the Indian performers of that time period were singing about Sitting Bull or Crazy Horse or Red Cloud or any of the old heroes of the Indian Wars period. Instead, they were singing in 1972, they were singing anti-BIA songs and AIM songs and hardcore Dylan-esque protest songs, you know. And so I decided, well, I'll start doing this until somebody else starts singing about these people. And to this day, no one has. So I'm still singing about those great old warrior chiefs and the root story for a lot of things around the country right now.
That was singer-songwriter Bobby Bridger speaking to Mike Shirky, host of The Pick and Post, which can be heard every Saturday night at 7 on KUAF. Bobby will be joined on stage by guitarist John Inman to perform Lakota at 7 o'clock this Saturday night at the Benton County School of the Arts in Rogers. Admission is $5 for adults and $3 for children. Tickets are available at Club Frisco and Spiral Out in downtown Rogers. More information is available at 501-420-2174.
They are a truly global all-star orchestra. Musicians from more than 70 orchestras from more than 40 countries. Valery Gergiev conducting the World Orchestra for Peace in concert in Chicago. I'm Fred Child. Join us for Wednesday's Performance Today from APM.
Performance Today beginning this evening at 8 o'clock here on KUAF.
KUAF is supported by Ben Owens Shelter Insurance Agency, providing auto, home, and life insurance. 582-4990 for more information.
And this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Farmington.
Excellent. Always need to spend some more time out in Farmington.
Yep.
And we have a couple more notes before we go today about some events coming up that you may be interested in. The next Poet Luck event is Thursday. That's tomorrow. It's going to be dedicated to area writers. Attendees will get a chance to read some new work or perhaps a bit of an old favorite. The readings follow a potluck dinner, so bring some food and some writing to share with other bookworms and fans of the written word. Poet Luck takes place every third Thursday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Writers Colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs. Everyone's welcome, and for more information, you can call 479-253-7444 or writerscolony.org.
Also tomorrow, the 2013 Franklin County Health Fair will be held at the Arkansas Tech Ozark in the Student Services Conference Center. Healthcare representatives from throughout the Arkansas River Valley will be on hand to provide information and answer questions about their services. Also, the event will feature free flu shots and PSA screenings for prostate cancer, as well as blood pressure and cholesterol tests. Handicapped parking will be available. More information by calling 479-508-8203.
Fall Fest at Devil's Den will explore the park's history on October 20th. Celebrate the park's 80th anniversary with the park staff as children are encouraged to bring animal costumes or create one Saturday afternoon for the nighttime walk with Mother Nature. And campers should bring wrapped candy to hand out to the kids Saturday nights on their walk around Area E. For more information, you can call 479-761-3325.
You visited Devil's Den State Park earlier this week.
I did. I went out there earlier this week to work on a story that you can hear tomorrow. When we were sitting around talking about them celebrating their 80th anniversary, which is kind of a big deal. I mean, it's been around a long time.
It is.
You know, 8 decades. We were trying to come up with an idea, and something that we came up with was, there are things that you're really familiar with at Devil's Den. You know, a lot of people go to Yellow Rock and do that trail. A lot of people do the Devil's Den trail. But
the cave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's something that people may not know about, or what, you know, that less people visit, you know, or pass by? And so went out there and got to talk to the staff, and they took me to one of their favorite places. And what was really cool about it is that they were saying, you know, this is hidden in plain sight, so you don't have to go too far to find it. So you can tune in tomorrow at Ozarks at Large to hear that story.
Right. Sounds good. An exhibit titled Barn Again will be on display October 18th through November 1st in the Fred and Mary Smith Exhibition Gallery in Vol Walker Hall on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. An opening reception will be held October 18th, beginning at 5:30 p.m. For more information, 479-575-4704 or architecture.uark.edu.
I'm looking forward to that one, and I need to get up to campus to see that, and probably before next week, because I think our lives are going to get a little more busy.
They will, but I do. I love old barns.
And right?
I think
it's fabulous. I'm looking forward to it. One more reminder, fall fundraiser is going on right now. You can make your pledge online at supportkuaf.com, where you can mail in your contribution. But the on-air portion will kick off next Thursday.
Yes, October 24th, mm-hmm. and we'll be going through the end of the month.
Yes, so thank you for your continued support. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a good Wednesday.